Hello, everybody. This is Craig D. Lindsay, a.k.a. Black Larry David, a.k.a. Uncle Krizzle, a.k.a. Captain Anadonia, a.k.a. Sticky Roberts, former adult film star, a.k.a. just a bunch of other things. And welcome to a very harried and eventful installment of Motherfuckers I Know, the podcast where I talk to motherfuckers I know, because Jesus Christ is just something I have to do to pass the time, alright? And for today's show, I'm on a digital voice recorder because I've been trying to get through this. Well, I'm on Skype right now talking with a friend of mine, a New York-based filmmaker. She's originally from Boston, Massachusetts. She has worked quite extensively doing various things, which we'll talk about hopefully in the next hour or so. So, Jesse Epstein, welcome to the Krizzlecast, ma'am.
Why, thank you.
Yeah, we should mention that the past hour, that we've spent before doing this has been rather eventful and has been quite infuriating for me, if I could say, because first off, I spent 50 minutes rebooting the computer to see if I could get an actual recording out of this punk-ass Skype call recorder that James Curl suggested I'd use. And then, when it did start working, yay, we started getting into the recording the podcast, and then your young child, who I... Is that a boy or a girl? What is that?
Oh, a girl.
A girl. The girl's name is?
Her middle name is Rue. We call her Rue. Mm-hmm. But her first name officially is Talia on her birth certificate.
Talia.
But we're trying that out. We think it fits. She's almost 3 months, so we're gonna
almost 3 months.
May keep it, but Rue is a definite.
Okay. Well, TR started crying.
And she wanted some booby juice.
Booby juice. Yes, you call it booby juice, and you thought it'd be a good idea if we shut down the operation. To work for you to concentrate on giving your lovely offspring some nectar from your bosom.
And it seemed to work. She's very quiet.
And so we went back, and of course, there was another 10-15 minutes of me trying to get the Skype call recorder to work, and I don't know if it isn't, so I'm just using the recorder here as a backup. So, if and when this episode drops, I'm pretty sure it'll be some shitty recording in some ways or something. But you know, but hey, it's a shitty podcast anyway.
No, we were talking about you being on a PC and me being on a Mac.
Yeah, I'm on an Ace. I don't know if I should say which kind of PCs and Macs. Well, you're on a Mac. You just say Mac, but I'm on a PC, and so. It was a cheap PC about 2 years ago, and just I'm pretty sure it's going to shut down any day now, which is good because I'm broke. So just be like, oh, it's shut down now. How I'm going to, do things?
You can do this from the local library.
Oh yes, with all the homeless people. So,
or you could go to the Apple Store and you could call people from the Apple Store and record it.
Yeah, I could do that.
But that's, you know.
Well, we'll figure that out when we get there, because right now I'm basically just moping, and it's not good for whatever the hell it is I do to keep people interested in this podcast that I do, because we need to get into who you are and why I decided to talk to you, and first we should establish how we first got to know one another.
Was it at Full Frame?
Yes, it was at the Full Frame Documentary Film Festival in Durham, North Carolina. And I think it was the year that you had your... Was it, I mean, because you were there twice. Were you there twice?
I was there three times.
Three times.
Three times with some short films.
Yeah.
So, and, the Wet Dreams and False Images. I was trying to remember the nickname. I could look up an email from you and see what you used to call me. It was something about, maybe in reference to me being short? I don't know.
Well, I mean, the whole thing was that I was looking for people to talk to, and I saw you, I think, bouncing around at this filmmaker party, and decided, she's a sprightly little pixie.
Exactly.
And I put that in the, I wrote this, I wrote this dispatch for my paper I was working for. And then apparently, I believe it's stuck in your craw or something, because nobody's called you out. Like, because every time I saw you, every time we would go to like the press room, we would meet see each other in the press room, you would look for yourself on Google Alert. Yes, and so you say, hey, that's the guy who called me a pixie and print and everything.
Exactly. If you Google my name, it would come up. But that's, there's a bike racer named Jesse Epstein and then a filmmaker. So, two filmmakers named Jesse Epstein.
Yeah.
But maybe if you Google Jesse Epstein Pixie, it would come up.
Well, I mean, I also noticed a guitar player named Jesse Epstein or some other things coming out there. But I'm assuming, assuming from the way I refer to as a pixie and your reaction to it, is that, you've gotten that type of thing for most of your life, has it been?
Yeah, but I'm learning to embrace it, I'm 42 now, so I'm accepting this.
Accepting that
being short is something that people can talk about socially, or like if you have two different color eyes, people feel comfortable. But if there was some other physical attribute, people might not feel comfortable. But it's a good, I'm glad that people feel comfortable.
Yeah. Right. Well, I mean, this is why it seems so impossible for me to talk to anybody, because.
Thanks.
Even when I refer to people in a complimentary way, as I thought I did with you,
I took it as a compliment.
You did?
Well, I remember in New York when, people would say shorty, and then I was like, shorty? People call you a shorty, that's a compliment, right?
Yeah, like, yo, shorty, or something like that, yeah.
It's like, but I thought it was like, what? I feel like I should, drink some more coffee. You're dealing with a good case of mommy brain.
Well, yeah, you told me that before we started this, that you might have mommy brain, whatever that means.
It's a special thing that happens to you, right after you breastfeed, where you get high, because you have oxytocin and prolactin, and it runs through your system, and it is like being high, but a little like spacey high, like you could fall asleep and smiling.
Really? I've never really heard that,
it's amazing. But it's definitely like a different state. So, it's going to be stream of consciousness.
Yeah, because, especially,
a little oxytocin.
Well, just under the, I don't know how if we could describe as under the influence. Just once again, one of the new things I find out within doing this podcast. That women who breastfeed can basically get a little loopy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a nice thing. It's just that then, you try to have a conversation and you realize you're a little dopey, but that's okay.
Yeah.
It's enjoyable.
Yes, enjoyable.
We went to a party at POV last night,
mm-hmm.
and had to breastfeed in one of the executive offices.
Yeah.
And then the head of POV let me change a diaper in his fancy, beautiful executive suite.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, you walk around the party and I was a little everybody's drinking beer, but I just had to breastfeed, and then I would be kind of on that same loopy, relaxed state.
Really? So.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, so let this be a lesson, ladies who don't have children yet. You want to get high really quickly.
Exactly. Or if you're debating if you want to breastfeed.
Yeah.
You can have, you know, it works both ways.
Yeah.
You feed the child, and the child relaxes you, man.
Yeah. Well, I mean, also, it's like, isn't like when you're breastfeeding, especially when you have... milk inside, like, didn't that get, like, painful after a while that you have to,
like, yeah. Engorgement?
Yeah.
Yeah, you get in, if you, like, especially in the middle of the night, if you try to wait too long,
uh-huh.
And you get, like, very lumpy engorgement.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool, though, I have to say. We've been, taking pictures, like, panoramic pictures of me breastfeeding in unusual places. So, you know, maybe there'll be some kind of a blog or a book.
Right, is this you and your husband taking panoramic pictures?
Yeah, panoramic on his iPhone.
Oh, really?
Wow. Yeah, breastfeeding in, you know, creative places.
Wow, so, yeah.
Renegade breastfeeding. Isn't that exciting? This could be a whole other movie. Yeah. Maybe this is the next film.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, this is the longest I've ever talked to anybody about breastfeeding, so I want to thank you. Thank you for taking me along this journey.
Did you want to talk about filmmaking?
Sure. Yeah, okay. we can talk about whatever.
It's just so interesting that you have a superpower where you can feed a person from your boobs and they can grow.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay, filmmaking.
Sure. But, okay, I mean, but we mapped it full frame and thought you were this cute little spark plug. Making these short films, and of course the first one I think it's and as you just mentioned, Wet Dreams and False Images, which I, if I remember, was about a Brooklyn barbershop barber, and he had a bunch of photos of women on his side, part of a wall or something like that, and I think the film was just like 5-10 minutes of him talking about, you know, that's what he loves about the women he puts on the walls and everything.
Right, but then we took some of his photographs to a photo retoucher and found out what was changed, and then showed him the footage of the photo retoucher talking about his photos, and he kind of freaks out. So that's, you know, basically the movie is him kind of discovering that he's been kind of worshipping a fantasy.
Yeah.
And he freaks out about it, and then comes to terms, and... And actually, we just made a little updated version of the film 7 years later.
Mm-hmm.
We're back to the barbershop, and he's taken all the pictures down off his walls, and he likes to show customers magazines and kind of tell them what's been done to the pictures.
Yeah.
So it's become a long journey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and we also mentioned that film is just one of several films done, I believe, a trilogy, if we may call it that. Called Body Type.
Yeah.
And it was a. It's kind of thing. Because I think at some point, I mean, I think like at the last time you were at Full Frame, you had the movie about the mannequins. 36.
Yeah, exactly.
36. What, 38? 20. I'm bad at numbers, but what was the title of it?
34-25-36.
Okay. And it's about. This, I guess, mannequin factory, and showing mannequins, and they're talking about how they come across making these mannequins in the form of an ideal of a woman, and so, you know, just talk about that whole thing. And I guess the main thing we should ask is just like, where did the where do you go about starting to make these films about?
Like, why? Why?
Well, yeah, sure.
I mean, the short answer, I guess, is that when I was little, I lived in Mozambique when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And came back to the U.S. when I was like, I was a preteen, and all my friends were like obsessed with being really skinny. And when I was in Africa, people were like not obsessed with being skinny. So I was very confused about sort of how these ideas of an ideal gets construction. And like, why is it that, you know, some people worship this sort of skinny body and then some people want full figure? Like, why is it that we're kind of worshiping these ideals?
I mean, of course, if you're in Africa and you're skinny, you know, you might be dying or something like that nature. Just like, it's kind of like a thing. Yeah, I mean, just like, it kind of depends, like, which part of the world you are in. It just, like, means something different to somebody. But I mean, would you find it to that kind of idea, that kind of sense that we care more about body image, that is more of a stateside thing?
I don't know. I just think it's a different image, you know? I mean, I was thinking about how the mannequin project got started because I was working in the Bronx. I was teaching video, ironically, to girls who are from Africa. Uh-huh. And then I would bike up there, and I would notice that, like, from Brooklyn all the way up to the Bronx, it was like, you go to the Bronx, and the mannequins were just booties. Like, they're just cut-off booty mannequins. And the same in Brooklyn. But then all in between, it was completely different. So depending on what neighborhood you were in, and what culture, it was a different kind of mannequin. Yeah. So it was, Midtown was more like about the boobs. And, you know, you go to Chelsea where it's mostly gay men, and it was like these skinny, like almost like boobless women, the mannequins. And then, so you could trace kind of the culture by looking at the different size mannequins in the different neighborhoods.
Yeah.
Cultural ideals. So that's how that project got started. But I wanted to research this particular mannequin company that makes Victoria's Secret mannequins, because they were one of the only companies that actually sculpt from real models.
Yeah.
But then their whole thing is that, you know, it's not a replica of the person, it's like a perfect version of that person.
Mm-hmm.
So I was interested in, like, you know, why is it that we kind of create these ideals and, like, idols to try to imitate, or like to feel bad if we don't look like them, even though, like, why are we doing this? Was sort of my question going into the film.
Well, I mean, you mentioning how you came back Mozambique to care and just finding that a lot of, I mean, what time was it? So I'm missing, like, you were like in. I'm trying to think, like, maybe it was like, it was more like the late 80s or stuff, something like that, where you just...
1979.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, I'm bad at math.
But then I came back, and still, like, right, even when I came back and I was that young, my best friend was like, I remember we drank orange juice and would, like, run up and down the stairs to try to burn off the calories and, like, try to be skinny, and she would cut out pictures from a magazine and put it around her mirror.
Yeah.
Just kind of like really skinny ladies.
Yeah.
So that was kind of the beginning of, like, wait, what? This is totally different. And, you know, how does this get in our heads as, like, the ideal, you know?
First off, when we first met, I thought you were younger than me. I thought it was just, thought that was a thing. Like, first, I usually when I meet a smaller ladies,
yeah,
there's always a sense that they're just like, they just have a youthfulness about them. So it's like, and that's what old pixie, like, you just sprouting around like bouncing like a Nerf ball, but I just, like, it just, I didn't think that you were like around that you'd be around that time where in the, like, the late 70s, and growing up and going through all that, and so, but I mean. Yeah, I do remember vaguely that time being a lot, with, you know, even though I'm, you know, younger. But it's just, like, I do remember from, like, around the time that it was, like, mostly, you know, it was about, like, the skinnier girls often, you know, getting out there and doing their thing, whatever the hell they were doing at the time. But,
The barbers are Dominican, and their whole thing is they want a big butt. Like, they're not interested in, like, skinny. They want, like, an ass.
Yeah.
Like, they love J-Lo's ass.
Oh, yeah.
But they're, you know, but it's like the perfect version of J-Lo's ass that's been airbrushed. So, you know. But they've come around. Like, I remember when I first went back to the barbershop after making the movie, and it was like at Sundance or something, so I was like bringing them all these, like, swag gifts that we had gotten.
Yeah.
And Dee Dee, the main barber, was like, I gotta show you something. And he had a trio. And he's like, look. So he showed me on his phone. He's like, look, it's my girlfriend's ass. It's a real ass. And like it was like this big revelation that he was showing me, like a real ass that had a little stretch marks and maybe some cellulite.
Yeah.
So he was, you know, he was proud that he was now going from this perfect ideal that is fake to the real booty.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, so that's, I guess, how you know as a filmmaker that there's some progress if you have people from your film showing you pictures of their girlfriend's booties.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned Sundance. I believe that's where your movie, your short won the Grand Jury Prize?
It was the Short Subject Jury Award.
Yeah, so, the Short Subject, you know, Jury Prize in that Short Subject.
We've talked a lot about short people, short films.
Do you want me to stop bringing that up altogether?
Hey. No, just don't sing that song. The Short People song?
Oh, okay.
It's very bad. It's very neat.
I just realized that you, like, grew up in the late 70s, so I'm thinking, yeah, of course. And that's when that song was popular, so, like, of course she's scarred.
I like being short. I gotta admit it. I love
smaller chicks. And I just like. Sorry, I want y'all to be my sister for some reason. I just like.
Right. See, nobody.
I don't want Ellen Page to be my little sister. I just can't.
You want to lean on us? People always think we're younger. They don't know what to make of it. And you know, you get to travel easier. There's some good benefits.
Yeah. Wait. How? I mean, what's the height we're talking about here?
It's a little less than 5 feet. A little less. So I'm not that little. But the other thing is about being a filmmaker and being short is when you're filming people, you're doing a low angle.
Yeah.
So they always look very big and important. Uh-huh. So people like it. You know? It's very useful.
Well, yeah. Well, it does work to your advantage as a filmmaker, just like making...
Unless somebody has a booger and then you see it and you're filming it. And you have to really be disciplined and stop and tell them.
But like people, you know, having some danglers.
Right. You'll notice. And it'll be very prominent.
Yeah.
On this angle. Anyway. So, yeah. So, and then the other thing about, you know, being a new mom is you don't sleep very much. So whatever you ask me, I will answer. But it may come out a little discombobulated.
So, no, you seem to be answering them quite well, just like, because we are getting into just, like, what makes you the person that you are, because just trying to figure out just where you grew up in Boston, right?
Huh?
And so, I mean, where did the, what was it like growing up in Boston in the 70s?
Right.
For you, just, like, what kind of environment are we talking about? Was it like all the Ben Affleck movies that I've seen?
It was a little like Ben Affleck movies. I could do an accent. It was wicked awesome.
Yeah.
It was wicked. It was friggin' awesome. It was mega. It was, you know.
Mega, yeah.
We'd go to our rump. We'd go to a party.
Yeah.
No, it was a place to grow up. I might be moving back there for a year.
Really? To do what exactly?
Well, I've got family there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with the new baby, people will cook for us. It's very nice. But there is a good documentary community in Boston.
Oh, yeah.
So,
Heading back over, check out movies at the Brattle.
Yeah. Or
the Harvard Film Archive.
The Dockyard.
Yeah.
That's called the Dockyard.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be awesome.
Checking out movies, the Coolidge?
Yeah. We just took little Rue to see a movie, her first movie at the Coolidge Corner. They dim the lights,
mm-hmm.
and then you can have, you can bring babies, and they're, like, screaming the whole time.
Yeah.
And hopefully it's at the right time in the movie, but, yeah, we saw a matinee. It was incredible. She's got a little onesie. That's the movie theater. I tell you, when I filmed The Wet Dreams of False Images showed at the Coolidge Corner, I was like, that was felt like a really big deal.
Yeah, it was like you made it. The hometown girl made good.
Hometown. It was the same theater where I saw It Came from Outer Space in 3D.
Oh.
It really mattered.
That movie fucked up my first VCR.
Really?
Yeah, because it was the first 3D movie I saw that on video. Because, this was, 84.
Oh,
and
God.
It was just like I saw him like, Mom, it's like, this, it came from outer space in 3D, and we took it and we watched it, and then the picture turned, like when we were watching when I was watching another VHS tape, the picture turned black and white.
Ooh.
And so it was like, it came from outer space. I'm pretty sure because that movie was in 3D or whatever. It's like,
possessed your VCR.
Yeah.
That's cool. I'd like to see that movie again.
It plays like every once in a while. I mean, I've seen it before on other occasions. Like I was at in Houston at the Rice Media Center, and they had they had the cardboard 3D glasses. They're really cheap cardboard 3D glasses.
Nice.
And they played it. They also played a 3D porno movie.
Oh my God, that's a lot of. That's a lot to look at.
Yeah, it was, like, after a while, just like, yeah, I don't, you took off the glass, like, I don't really need to see this in 3D. I don't really need to see John Holmes' penis in 3D.
That's impressive. Was it, very well lit, or was it?
It was a 70s porno movie.
Oh, God.
So you can just guess at how hilarious things were set up in that movie. It's just like, it's the craziest shit. First of all, it's always funny watching movies from the porno movies from the 70s, because it's not like porno movies now where just like everybody's got plastic surgery, or they just look all busted.
Right.
In a way, I kind of like the 70s porno movie because it looked like all the people in the movie looked like they just got off of work.
Nice.
It's just like they look like real people, and just like
by the set.
Yeah, just like none of these like Barbie and Ken dolls, all smoothed out and pube free, which I don't even get that shit. But,
that's weird.
Yeah.
Well, that's an interesting like body image thing. This, you know, I was a few years ago. I was in Belgrade and I was shooting someone else's film, and like at 7 o'clock. Everyone just started gathering around the television, and I didn't know what was going on. Long story short, there was, like, porn just on the regular TV at, like, 7 o'clock. Because that's when the unemployment rate went up, that was, like, the government solution. It was, like, it'll make people happy if you just have porn. But it was so well lit that it was, like, ass pimples, and, you know, it was all the, like, regular body things. So it was pretty interesting. So I imagine that in 3D would be, like, you know, would people want to see it? Or do people want, like, the perfect fake boobs? What do you think? It sounds like you would rather see the normal, regular bodies.
Well, I mean, that's just me. Because, actually, I interviewed an adult film star on this podcast one time. And, but she was more of, I guess we call it BBW porn star. Because I wanted to talk more about that. How, like, you know, they're, like, different porn actresses for different for different niches, for different. I mean, so it isn't just one form of porn. It's like there's so many different forms of porn, and we talked about that in great detail. How just like there's porn for everybody. So it's not, and it's kind of like interesting talking to you about this. I didn't think we'd get down this road, but it's just like because you mentioned. You got the idea for these shorts when you were just riding a bike along New York, all through New York, and you just went to all these different places and just realized that there are different ideas, ideals of women in mannequins or whatever. And it just like, and I always get, I as somebody who has, you know, doesn't really have a type per se, it's just, and I feel that a lot of other men feel the same way. I mean, just like, it's kind of this odd thing to believe there is this lone seminal image of a woman, or man, woman, or any like perfect image, because like it's like I think I often feel that one of the great things about living in this world and just live, you get all these different varieties of people. It's never done as one perfect thing. So it just seems strange that there's this. It always seems strange to me that there's this sense that that there's still people hold this image, this thing in their head that this is what the one perfect woman should be,
right?
And we should all abide by it.
I know, it's pretty crazy. I hear a little Bunchki. There might be a little bit of crying.
Yeah.
It may be booby juice time again, because she did fall asleep on the nipple last time.
Yeah.
Oh, booby! But anyway, speaking of that, one thing that was interesting about being pregnant is that it's, like, totally different. Like, it was really fun, because in a way you get to just, like, it's, like, you know, completely outside of everything. So
yeah.
Although there is, like, some weird ideal of pregnancy, too, that you're supposed to be, like, really skinny and just have a baby. So
yeah.
You kind of, like, look like you're not pregnant from the back, and then you turn around and you've got this thing. But it did make me realize how crazy it is to try to, like, fit some specific weird thing, because it's so much more interesting to not be in that. Like, to just be like, what the hell is this? Like, bodies are so weird. Why are we, you know, kind of creating this art picture of men and women or whatever and then trying to be that? It just seems nuts in a way. So, but that's the, you know, there's a challenge. And plus I have a girl.
Yeah.
So I have to figure out how to, like, raise her in a way that she doesn't buy into all this.
Well, yeah, just thinking. I mean, I was going to save this question for till later, but, you know, since you are a mother and you're mother of a girl, just like, And once again, being a person you are, how are you going, what are you planning to do to impart, like, because, first of all, I know you don't, you know, no parent exactly knows what the hell they're going to do to make sure their kid grows up to be somewhat respectable, but it's just, but just like, I mean, is there like a goal that you want to achieve with raising your child, and just...
I don't, I mean, that might be the next film project, because it's like, how do you do it?
Yeah.
I mean, how do you raise somebody in a culture where there's, like, all this pressure to be this certain thing, and how do you make sure they feel good about themselves?
Yeah.
Because nobody, like, not even the models look like the images of the models that we see. So, like, what, you know, how do you, maybe it's just about making sure she knows that it's all, like, art, it's just constructed. But I don't know. That's what we have to figure out. Or, like, appreciate other things, like what your body does versus what it looks like from the outside. But it's gonna be tricky.
All right. I'm 36 years old, and I feel, and I mentioned this every podcast on 36 years old, but I just feel that I've gotten to this age where it's just like, I don't give a fuck what you look like. Just talk to me. I understand these guys are still, you know, I understand men and women who are picky, especially when it comes to this age. Because it's just, I was hanging out with a friend of mine. We just saw a movie, and we were walking past this restaurant, and people were, you know, eating and talking and everything. And he was looking at the girls, and he was just looking at this girl, these girls and everything. And I was just like, what are you looking at? So that girl over there. And I was, and I saw there was this very curvy, full figure lady. And so I said, are you looking at that? Are you talking about that girl over there? And it's like, nah, just like, and he said, well, why not? Just like, oh, cause I don't dig the heavier girls.
Wow.
And in my mind, I'm thinking, well, first off, you're passing up a lot of easy blowjobs thinking that way. And secondly, just like, you know, and he was kind of like, he's kind of a couple years older than me. And I'm just like, you're still at that age where you're picking, where you've been out there, and you know how, you know, and you kind of have a sense of how different women can be, you know, mentally and physically, and you still have a type or some shit, and just like, I don't get that kind of thing.
Okay. Hold on, we're getting a poopy diaper. Is she okay? All right, we got my husband's in charge of output, and I'm in charge of input.
So really, this
is he's that, really good at the output.
The system that you guys got.
Got a system going, but anyway, yeah, about being picky and I don't know. It's all for whatever reason. Maybe it's having a baby. Like at this point, I'm like, why? What? We're crazy. Like, why are we waste so much time and energy trying to like compare everything to something that is fake?
Yeah,
it's strange. It's strange. We're weird. But people doing it. So tomorrow, my film is showing in this film festival called Women in Fashion Film Festival, and it has all these like supermodels involved and Patricia Field, like designers.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a whole panel about like beauty and the industry and da da da. And what was that? Why were they saying it's the mannequin movie that's playing?
Okay.
But part of me is like, right? I guess there are so many people who care about this. I lost my train of thought because I was worried about the
pooping. But is this like you feel? I mean, you feel when you play at festivals like that. People will get it.
Is that I don't know.
Like when you talk about that, it seems like you know people. Do people even have an understanding of what you're trying to bring with you?
I'm curious. Like I think I want to go, and I actually want to bring a camera and try to film it because I'm curious. Like if they're within the industry where all this is where this stuff is made, all these images of this ideal. Like what do they think of it? You know, do they? Because part of it, you know, when I first started making these films, I was like, oh, you know, there's kind of this separation of, like, the beauty industry and then people. And I was like, they're making images that make us, you know, strive for blah, 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 so we'll buy something or whatever. But now I feel like it's much more complicated because it's like, we're all people. Like, that person in the beauty industry is an artist making an image of a perfect person. And then, so we're all kind of buying into it. And like you said about the porn, like, do people want to see real bodies? Like, what about American Apparel? Like, there's pubes and stuff in the American Apparel ads. And, you know, do we like that better? Or would we rather see, you know, perfect bodies?
Yeah. The models in American Apparel ads also look underaged. So there's that thing, which is just, that's kind of creepy. But, I don't know. Yeah. But yeah, just... But like I was saying, just like when I interviewed that porn star on my show, it's just we were just talking about how it was really like they have this idea that people generally have this idea that it's like porn stars looking like the same type of person with the big fake boobs and the fake hair weaves, hair extensions, and all that, and it has this image. But, you know, and upon further investigation, and, I mean, there's so many forms of you know, adult entertainment that appeals to so many different people.
Mm.
And just, like, we always get this idea that it's just one type of thing, when, in fact, that just, like, there's so many different, as you've spoken already, just some, like, people enjoy different types of things. It's never just one thing. Mm. So why do we always have this sense that that's always just this one thing that appeals to everybody? And that's never the case. It's never the case.
But then, like, what is sexy? Like, is sexy someone who's, like, you know, fake and their boobs can't feel anything anymore because they've had so much work on them? Like, I don't know. Is that sexy or is it more sexy to, like, I don't know, go skinny dipping or feel free? I don't know. Like, it's funny. Like, we're all trying to meet.
I mean, well, of course, it's always like sexiness or what people find attractive is subjective. And it's always disappointing when I find that people don't know what they find attractive in somebody. I know they don't find me attractive because they tell me all the time. But,
Come on.
Yo, you, fuck, I've gotten used to it now. It's just like, okay, women don't like me. That's okay. That's cool. I'm fine. And so I'm just gonna mosey on and do stuff. But
so you think, so men, I mean, it's like it works both ways. But a lot of times you think of women having, like, body image issues, but it's men too. You know, that's a whole nother. Like, there's, like, teenage boys getting calf implants and pec implants, like, when they're, like, it's crazy.
Oh, yeah, just. Well, as somebody who basically grew up with titties. It's that shit can take it can take its toll on you.
Right.
It's just
right.
Like I gotta be the dude with titties. It's
exactly.
Just that's my lot in life. It's, and the funny thing is, like, I've lost weight over the past year and a half. And so it's like I've gotten you know, I've lost some weight, but I still got titties. But it's like it's like titties I can handle. Apparently, it's
nice.
It's like nothing worse than wearing a wife beater, and you just see like you just look like you should be in a damn dance video because you look like you got cleavage. And it's you know, I should go down this road because it'll just lead me to start drinking more. But
But then some girl who doesn't have titties should feel bad. It's weird, right?
And then that's another thing, because just like, you know, of course, women are designated to have the bosoms.
Right.
And but for some reason, you know, it is an attribute. It's a physical attribute. But we kind of live in this culture where we can't really acknowledge breasts.
Yeah.
It just,
well, breasts are just from having a kid and breastfeeding has been hilarious because, like I said, we're doing this series of photographs of breastfeeding in weird places,
yeah,
or whatever. But in some places, people just can't handle, like, to me now, boobs are like function. It's like food. It's like a bag of food for my baby. So I don't think about it. I take my boobs out in public, and the baby's walking by. So. Or being carried by. But, so I just take my boobs out in public, but then, like, there was one time I was on the Upper West Side in a cafe, and had been to the Museum of Natural History. We took a picture, a panorama of me breastfeeding there. It was fine. But then I was in this cafe in the window, and I was breastfeeding, and there were, like, all these people walking by, like, pointing, kind of laughing, because I was just sitting there breastfeeding, and it was totally freaking people out. But it is weird. I mean, we have a thing. And you know, I guess it is funny. Once you have a baby, your body is much more like function. It's less like, oh, my titty's out. But then sometimes I'll stand up and my boob will be out and I'll forget about it. And, you know, normally I wouldn't walk around with, like, my boob out. But now it just, like, sort of becomes a little more normal.
Yeah.
But you still have to realize that some people can't handle it.
Also, and we keep going back to the idea of just the ideal image of people. Like, because in my mind, people have an idealized sense of what breasts stand for. I mean, just like, they're fun. There's stuff to look at. There's stuff to ogle. Just like stuff to get you aroused. I mean, so like when you are in a public place and your titty is out and you're using it to breastfeed your child, it's like it freaks people out because like people don't see sense. People don't see breasts like that. People aren't supposed to see it like that. They want to see it, you know, all alluringly. Yeah, sexy, alluring manner. Not supposed to be this maternal tool.
No, but it is. It's really amazing. It's bizarre. But it does, it's a completely different thing.
But going back to filmmaking, we always keep seeing this slide over these detours here, but how did filmmaking stuff for you start? Because I mean, was it something you kind of started younger age, or when you went to college, or stuff like that?
Good question. It was sort of evolved, and then actually, I knew that the reason why I wanted to make films was to kind of challenge this idea about the perfect body.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of went into it thinking, oh, I want to make this like political films, but then I fell in love with like the craft of it, and light, and the art of cinematography, and so I sort of became a filmmaker inadvertently. At first it was more like media activism, I guess, but so it sort of evolved. And then I worked in the film industry for a long time doing art department and props and kind of learning that way.
Yeah, you were a property master, weren't you?
It was. I got props. I did Girl Fight. Did you ever see Girl Fight? That was
fun. No, I never saw Girl Fight, but I did see Loving Jezebel.
No! What?
Yeah, I did. He used to show... movie used to come on like the Stars channel all the time, like back in the day.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
That movie was a turning point for me, but I don't wanna, it was just, yeah, there's a lot I could say about that movie.
Well, let's go.
No, I can't.
What?
It was great. I mean, it was a very, because the filmmaker, it was about his life.
Yeah.
So he, I guess, had affairs with his best friend's girlfriends. No, yeah, and then they would break up, and it would, like, he always, so he cast a lot of the real women that he had affairs with as themselves, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So it was an interesting movie to work on. What do you think of it?
Well, I found it funny because first of all, it starred Hill Harper. He was the main protagonist, and he had that shitty Ivan Neville dreadlocks thing going on.
Oh yeah! Oh my god, I forgot.
Yeah, just like
I never saw the final film.
Yeah, it used to be on, like, you know, when, like, back when it was just Encore and Stars. Yeah, they would just show that all the time, and just,
oh my god.
Yeah. So,
I never saw. There was a lot of behind the scenes, like, yeah. I don't know. I don't know how much I should get into. It was a lot of stuff, but I will tell you, what was a good thing to talk about? There was one crazy moment on that film that I'm trying to remember the whole story that involved rotting tuna fish that was left on set, like, for a long time. That was, I don't know. You know, long story. But the one thing I did learn, should I give you a secret from that movie?
Sure.
Not very, very exciting, but if anybody out there wants to make a fake cappuccino in a movie, you should use shaving cream. Because it lasts for like 3 days.
Yeah.
Because there's a whole scene in a cafe and we have to keep making them. That's not very exciting. But
there's a bunch of scenes in cafes, if I remember that.
I know, so we were freaking out because you make foam and it dies.
Yeah.
And so one day I just had the idea of putting shaving cream with cinnamon, and it would last under the lights for like 3 days.
Yeah.
So, you know, that was one thing I learned.
Well, you know, it's funny because, you know, you mentioned Girl Fight, which, you know, even I remember seeing some of it, but just like at some point, but it's just like that, you know, it's interesting you mentioned that movie, and then I mentioned Loving Jezebel, which, you know, it seems like you would be more proud of working on Girl Fight, which was a very...
I shouldn't say, I never saw the final Loving Jezebel. It was, the baby's crying.
Oh, man.
Bumpy! She's usually not crying that much. Today's
because I'm here.
It could be you, it could be the rain.
Yeah.
It could just be lack of booby juice because I've been on the phone. Is she okay? Oh, Bumpy. There might be a meltdown. I might have to administer the booby juice.
Well, yeah, just like we can see it work it out. I mean, we've been talking for a long time, but just like I just wanted to, like, see if we can get some things going and just. But
I would say Loving Jezebel. No, I just meant the whole crew. It was a crazy experience, but I think the movie, it turns out, is a pretty good movie.
Yeah, but just like, where, how do you get all that stuff that in the. Like, as a property manager, how do you evolve from that to doing...
Yeah. Well, that's what I say about Loving Jezebel. It was the last movie that I did props on, and I kind of realized, like, I just was... You know, like, you have these, like, what-the-fuck moments in your life.
Mm-hmm.
So I was sitting on a milk crate in Central Park, and I just had this, like, epiphany that I was like, I am in the wrong place.
Mm-hmm.
So that was, like, the last time I did it, and I just jumped ship... And I started making documentaries, and then I ended up, I had $23 in my bank account, but at least I had started making documentaries, and I went back to Mozambique and made a film. So it was like just that time period where I realized that I love movies, but I didn't want to be a prop master forever. Even though it was fun, it wasn't me.
Yeah.
It was like I was stretching my brain in a way that it wasn't really, because you have to be really... meticulous, right? Like, every time you see a movie, if someone's like, you know, let's say there's a scene in a movie where someone rips off a necklace, and then, like, the next scene they're wearing it again, that's like a disaster.
Yeah.
So when you're a prop master, you have to, like, mathematically carve out the whole film and, like, remember that scene 51, even though you do scene 52, you know, 4 weeks after you shot scene 51, you have to make sure they're not wearing the necklace when they're not supposed to, or they are when they are. So yeah. You have to, like, really be kind of OCD.
Yeah.
To do a good job. So that was, on Loving Jezebel, I kind of realized, I think I need to start doing something else.
Yeah. Am I not looking at you right now because, you're like, just in case you have to eject some booby juice, I have to see you?
Well, there seems to be... See, she had... It seemed like she had enough booby juice. She may... Sometimes she gets a little grumpy just when she has to, like, take a crap.
Yeah.
Like, it's a little bit painful because their systems are so new.
Yeah.
So they freak out. Like, they fart and they cry when they fart because they're, like, uncomfortable with what's going on.
Yeah.
She may be okay, but if not, I'm going to have to administer the booby juice.
Well, I'm just saying, because I'm not seeing you right now, so just like...
Did I hang up?
No, you didn't hang up, but I can hear you, but I can't see you. So I know if you didn't want to be seen, just in case you have to pop the boobie out.
I don't know how that happened, but that's a good trick, right?
Yeah.
Then I could be, like, breastfeeding while doing a lot of things.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Oh, boobie. Is she okay? Oh, it makes me sad. I can't hear her cry. It hurts my heart.
Well, I mean, I'm finding as you know, talking with many parents, especially many mothers, like when, you know, the maternal instinct just goes out like crazy when the child, you know, cries or experiences some sort of pain. Even like, I remember I was hanging out with a family, and I was playing around with this one kid, and he. Like I grabbed his arm. Apparently, he didn't like it. He didn't like it when I grabbed his arm, and he thought it. But I didn't grab it that hard. I know. Like me and the dad both agree, I didn't grab it that hard.
Okay, I have to interrupt. I have to go see if she's okay. Okay. What should I do? Can you keep telling the story, and I'll be right back.
Well, once again, I don't know where you are, so just like I could tell the story, but I'll.
Okay. I'll be right back.
Okay, she'll be right back. She's. Hopefully injecting some booby juice into the kid. And I hope this is turning out great, because as we are recording it, it just couldn't get any worse right now. Recording it on a voice recorder, and like, I don't know, you may have some buzzing throughout this whole damn thing. And I can't see Jesse now, so just like, it's damn it. I made some cinnamon rolls earlier in the day, and I may, like, give that out at a party later on, just telling you what I did during the day.
Okay. I'm back, and I do have the baby, and I am breastfeeding, but you can't see me, right?
Yeah, I can't see it. Just...
Oh, good. Phew.
Yay.
You can't see anybody. There's a t-shirt.
You can still see me, right?
Yeah. So she must have fallen asleep before when she was drinking the booby juice, so she needs a little top off.
Yeah, needs some more of that booby juice action. But I was just saying how, just like I was hanging out with his family, I was playing around with this kid, I kind of grabbed his arm, not painfully, and but he thought it was pain, and he kept holding his arm, and the mother like was holding her arm in like sympathetic pain.
Oh my God, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, has that happened yet?
No, but oh, that's interesting, right? Because it's like they're not you, but they were in your body, so it's kind of like an extension feeling, like, of you. That's weird. I will say when she cries, it's like I can feel it in my body.
Yeah.
It's like a pull.
Yeah.
And you got to try to relax so you don't get all frenetic. And start, like, you know, I don't know, just everything can go wrong if you don't take a deep breath.
Yeah.
But that's interesting. So sympathetic pain when your baby had a pain. Wow.
Yeah, just like, I didn't really broach the subject enough, whatever, but just like, I just saw, like, he was holding his arm, she was holding her arm, and I'm just like...
Oh my God.
What the hell is going on here?
Well, this is like a drug, so I'll tell you what's going on right now. The baby is drinking the booby juice, and her eyes are kind of like rolling back in her head, like a little demon baby.
Yeah.
She's so blissed out.
Yeah. How are you feeling right now?
You have that feeling right now?
No, how are you feeling right now?
I'm getting a little high. I've got a little oxytocin, mm-hmm. a little prolactin.
Yeah.
It's pretty awesome.
How is having a child and just, has it broadened your view as a filmmaker? Or
I know. It's tricky. I mean, I went to my first big film party last night and I brought the baby. So mm-hmm. that was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
But then, you know, it's a big question. Like, for Full Frame, I was going to be on the jury.
Yeah.
And then, it was right when the baby was due. So I was like, so maybe next year.
Yeah.
So, I got to feel it out. But there's an instinct to want to film your kid and make a movie about your kid.
Yeah.
That's what everybody who has a baby that I know, like, they film themselves all through the pregnancy and then they make a movie about having triplets or whatever.
It's interesting talking with you about this whole thing, about everything filmmaking and being a parent, because Here's what I get from you mostly, I've seen some things you've done on your Vimeo page.
Oh, it's
like,
okay.
Like you did that commercial about the future mechanics and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's just, and I gotta get the sense, like, because you know, people would get the sense from you, since you make, like, you've made these body type movies and all that, that you're kind of like just have this feminist sense of, because you want to, you know, show world just like this is how women are perceived and how women are not perceived and the trickery used and everything. But also, in viewing other things that you've done, you seem to have this sense of you always focus your camera, focus your work on and antiquated notions. And it's just like things that are very antiquated and very almost a traditionalized sense that doesn't really feel traditional, and you kind of find a way to show, like, going against that grain, like who's going against that grain, who's trying to, like, build, like, kind of go beyond that, and just like this whole sense of showing people what is the antiquated idea and just the ways that people can evolve and progress from those ideals.
Ooh, I like that. I'm gonna transcribe that. That's exciting.
Okay.
But how would you say, okay, so I'm making a film right now about mosquitoes. That's a whole nother thing.
Yeah.
But, because did you know that mosquitoes have killed more people than anything else in the whole world throughout history?
Well, I would seem that that would be the case, especially in other countries where mosquitoes can be, like, very large and very and carry a lot of things that would make them be such, like, an epidemic.
But we've had, last summer was the largest West Nile cases in the U.S. ever.
Yeah.
So, like, maybe this stuff is coming back here.
Yeah.
It's kind of crazy.
I mean, there is always that mosquito West Nile epidemic come out, like, HLN1, is that it?
Right, and West Nile.
Yeah.
But then, like, maybe the idea of dengue fever.
Yeah.
So we've been, I'm just trying to think of what you said and if that fits into the new film, because basically it's a lot of people who are, we're following scientists.
Yeah.
They're trying to, like, kill mosquitoes. They're trying to make a laser, like, laser-based bed net.
Yeah.
So they're trying to use, like, high-tech to combat mosquitoes. And then there's, like, other groups of people who are trying to use very low-tech.
Yeah.
But it's a whole, you know, like, the mosquito solution.
Well, I mean, that's kind of like, you explain it right there, just like there are those that are trying to use high-tech technology mm-hmm. to advanced technology to kind of nip this mosquito situation in the bud. And there are those who are using, you know, very low technology, and it's kind of like that struggle. I don't know exactly what the movie's about. I haven't seen any of it, but from how you talk about it, I mean, it kind of fits into what, you know, we've been talking about, how there is that sense of, like, this is how things were in the past, or this is how things have had this sense of how things have worked, and there are these ways that people can advance from that and kind of move on and try to make some new traditions or just new ideas work.
and see if it works.
Yeah.
The other scientist we're following right now is a British guy who is genetically modifying male mosquitoes so that they will, like, kill themselves.
Yeah.
It's horrible. When they mate with wild female mosquitoes, the offspring are, I hate to say this while I'm breastfeeding, but the offspring are born, like, totally screwed up and they die, and then the females die.
Yeah.
So it's, like, basically using genetic engineering for mosquitoes to, like, self-annihilate. It's crazy.
Yeah.
But then there's this other group of people who are, like, you know how there's a lot of abandoned houses that are, like, foreclosed, have swimming pools back here?
Yeah.
So that, oops, hold on, I have to relatch. So, I'm multitasking.
Okay.
So there's, okay, so in a lot of foreclosed homes, there's, you know, they're abandoned, they're overgrown.
Yeah.
And swimming pools become, like, breeding grounds for mosquitoes.
Yeah.
So if you don't do something about it, there could be a huge amount of mosquitoes in West Nile spreading in neighborhoods where there's a lot of foreclosed homes. So there's people who are raising this fish called Gambusia Finnish fish, which is a non-native fish to, to a lot of regions, and they're putting it in the swimming pools in the abandoned homes.
Yeah.
Trying to get the, relatching, they're trying to get the fish to eat the mosquito larvae so there'll be less mosquitoes.
Yeah.
So that's this crazy low-tech solution, but it's also like introducing a species of a fish that doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Maybe like that could have unintended consequences.
Yeah.
No. Or maybe it's brilliant. So we're looking at that too.
Well, so that's another thing, hopefully, because what I get from your movies and also is that you do have this sense of, I admit, maybe this is just me looking at it from my perspective, but there is a sense of objectivity. Maybe I'm wrong, but just like, I remember watching Wet Images and False Dreams, and just like talking to Barbara Deedy about all this, about the women and stuff like that, and you're just showing them him what's, you know, what's airbrush and whatnot, but you never pass judgment on this person, and that's like, this is what he likes, and just showing him just what, and it's the same thing also with, the mannequin designers and makers, and the number movie I keep forgetting, it's just that, you just show what's out there, and,
I mean, that's my goal, is to, like, get it so people don't feel judged, but more like create a discussion.
Yeah.
So it's not like, I mean, also I don't have the answer. Like, you know, how would anybody know what's been done to a picture? Because, you know, people are like brilliant. The airbrushers, the photo retouchers are really good at their job. So they basically do it. So like maybe they'll airbrush something and make it look more skinny, but they'll leave a little bit of bloodshot eyes.
Yeah.
So you think you're looking at a snapshot, but really it's been retouched, you know, to death or whatever. So basically, but how would anyone know?
Yeah.
You know? So hopefully that's my goal, is to try to take a stance of like, okay, you know, why do we do this rather than, you know, judging people? Because I guess I don't feel like I have all the answers.
Yeah.
But, and it's more interesting to find out, you know, why people do what they do than it is to just accuse them of being, like, being wrong for me.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's the gist. Oh. Anyway.
But how do you feel about, how do you like playing a witch doctor on a web series?
Wow, you saw that?
Yep.
Oh my God. How did you see that?
It's on the web.
Oh my God. Yeah, that was a little interesting.
Yeah.
Cast me.
Wait, we should tell them what the show is about. It's called The Louise Log.
Yeah. And it's this awesome filmmaker who, she's great, but she basically makes this whole web series herself. Like, she shoots a lot of it.
Yeah.
But it's a whole story about this woman, Louise, and you hear voices in her head.
Yeah.
And anyway, there's an episode about a witch doctor where, like, her husband's in a coma, and then I do some ceremony, and the body of the her sister, no, wait, hold on, her husband's body gets switched with the soul of her sister's French husband, and it becomes this whole thing. But yeah, what did you think? That was quite a, casting me as like a spiritual witch doctor.
Yeah, because you were a witch doctor, but I love how they point out that because it's you, and because you're playing the witch doctor, like, the voiceover lady said, like, why did, or the voice said, why do we have to get a white lady from Brooklyn as a witch doctor? Because he looked just, it wasn't like any big, like you had this stuff over your head or whatever, this outfit on, but you didn't look out of place. And it's like you with some crazy outfits on and just, you were the witch doctor.
Exactly. It was fun. But it was a little, like, nerve-wracking because I hadn't done acting in a long time.
Yeah.
And I get, like, the script and I'm like, what? You want me to play, you know, a witch doctor and do spells and, like, do a whole thing? But, you know, it was pretty fun. Oh, there's still... Sorry, I'm just making sure she's latched.
Okay.
But, yeah, it was quite a bold casting.
Yeah. I mean, what kind of previous acting you've done?
I did acting all through college and then a little when I first moved to New York. But then, I guess it's something I want to get back to. Because yeah. It's pretty fun.
Yeah.
It's like ultimate meditation, I think. Because you have to, like, just be totally focused.
Yeah.
In the moment. But, you know. So that was like an experiment to get back to the acting chops and see how it feels.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah. Anyway. Yeah. Oops. Sorry, there's she's still falling asleep on the nipple. I don't know what's going on.
Well, I mean, I guess we should stop calling it booby juice and calling it knockout juice.
Knockout juice, exactly.
Yeah, just like she just gets knocked out every time she sucks down.
I think there's like a small movement to like market booby juice for adults.
First of all, let's just see if we can get booby juice out there in the stratosphere. See if people. I don't know how often people use.
Oh yeah, that might be a not a term that everybody uses.
Yeah, booby juice. I've heard of booty juice.
Ooh, that's a little bit different.
Yeah, a little bit risque, but I have not heard of booby juice.
Booby juice. Booby juice. She's falling asleep. So sweetie. It's a very rainy day here. It's like maybe she's passing out because it's so dark.
Yeah, and well, I mean, apart from the what is the mosquito documentary? Are you working on any other things?
Yeah. I'm working on another film that I like, and I'm trying to figure out how we're going to finish it. But it's a movie about a guitar orchestra.
Okay.
So it's like a 22-piece guitar orchestra. But it's kind of a lot about, it's about this guy who started sorry, she's burping up on the nipple. Hi, sweetie. It's about a guy in Northampton, Massachusetts who started a guitar orchestra,
mm-hmm.
but he tries to, long story, he's, you know, trying to figure out how to, like, live as an artist in the world.
Yeah.
And have a family, and like, whether or not, if you make money, do you become kind of a sellout, or do you feel like you're more successful? So, it brings up a lot of issues about how to survive as an artist.
And once again, getting back to like the antiquated notions of how artists are supposed to be,
right?
And trying to say like, can we progress off from that and just say like, this is who I want to be as an artist, and can I make money as an artist and still do that without being seen as a sellout or
like
something?
What success, you know? Yeah. He was saying that his father like did two jobs and died of a heart attack.
Yeah.
And he kind of watched this, and he's like, well, I'm never going to get a job where I'm watching the clock and, like, living a life of drudgery. He's like, but, you know, if I'm not making any money, but I'm doing what I love to do, am I successful?
Yeah.
You know? So it kind of brings up a lot of that stuff. So that's basically shot, but we have, like, a bazillion gigabytes on hard drives, and we need to continue editing.
Yeah. I mean, you find as a documentary filmmaker that it's just like, I don't know, would you say, especially like a lot of the documentary subjects you seem to come across, especially these days, is it more easier to get things going, or is it still like the same old just like struggle and just trying. It's in terms of just like getting subjects, getting getting money to do this stuff, getting the equipment to do this stuff. I mean, just how has it been progressing? Because I believe like wasn't Wet Dream wasn't that on film? Wasn't that shot on film?
No, it was actually video, but it was but I was in school, so that was amazing. Yeah. I had to just go into debt and work on it for a year.
Yeah.
What I think is hard right now about filmmaking is that, you know, so many people are doing it. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times people don't want to film you when you're in the process of it. They want to film it when it's at the end, yeah. When it's like, you know, they don't have to take a risk. Uh-huh. So, you know, it's harder to get funding when you're in the middle or in the beginning, but it is... Like, so it's a tricky time right now.
Yeah.
Because a lot of stations that used to fund ideas are now, like, buying finished films. So you have to find a way to, like, finish your film and then try to sell it. So it's tricky.
Yeah.
It's definitely a hard time right now in terms of that.
Yeah, because, like, your last film was, the PBS show POV?
Yeah, But that was, you know, I had grants from this organization called Chicken and Egg.
Yeah.
And they were awesome. They're incredible. So they fund you kind of like early on, and then they stay with you.
Yeah.
But the guitar film, we need to find some like rich guitar lover who collects like bizarre old guitars, and maybe that's the best way to do it.
Well, of course you're in Brooklyn, which is a hipster wonderland, so I don't think that'll be difficult.
I hope so. Ooh! All right, there's a little poo-poo going on.
Oh, wow, this is...
Gavin's, maybe?
Yeah.
There might be a little gas. Aw. Okay, so now you've witnessed the input, and now I'm handing her off to the husband who is in charge of the output.
Okay, just like a well-oiled machine right there.
Exactly.
Real briefly, I know just like you got everything to deal with family-wise and everything, but like one thing I found captivating with you as a filmmaker is that I don't know if you still do this, but like I mean you mentioned earlier how you were teaching filmmaking to young African kids, and I read how you were. Like you were manning the youth lab at Sundance. How important? I mean, is it like is it an important thing for you to teach the youth of making it? You know, you can be a filmmaker if you can go out there and you try to hit them at an early age to show that you know give them the know-how and everything to mm-hmm. you know they should have the you know give them what. They should know the most about being a filmmaker?
Yeah, I mean, I've been teaching in the summers now with this group called the Girls Leadership mm-hmm. Institute, mm-hmm. and it's pretty awesome. I mean, it's in some ways, like, if you teach teenagers specifically, or, like, preteens to make their own movies,
yeah.
then they know that, you know, when they're looking at an ad, it's a construction. You know, mm-hmm. they know that it's, like, someone's point of view, and
yeah.
it's not just, like, a given, so... In a lot of ways, just by learning the skills of making a movie yourself, you kind of know, you can, it's like media literacy. Like, you know
yeah.
that this stuff is constructed.
Yeah.
So it's the power away from it in certain ways, but then it also, you know, empowers people to tell their own stories.
Uh-huh.
So that's, yeah, that I love it. But, yeah. It's funny you mentioned teaching at Sundance was really kind of awesome because the kids were mostly Mormon, and
they were
respectful and nice, and like it was actually really interesting because like if you make a movie with a teenager in New York City, a lot of times it's like to make a political film is like very extreme, or it's like about teen pregnancy, or it's mm-hmm. about like some issue.
Mm-hmm.
But then in Utah, if you make like in order to rebel. It's so much more subtle. Like, there was a kid who made a film about how he loved Tai Chi.
Okay.
And that was, like, an ultimate, you know, he was kind of worshiping outside of the church, in a way.
Uh-huh.
So he had to really be careful in the film he was making to not offend, you know, his family. And he did a really good job. But it's so much more subtle, like, to be really political there is to like is very much more subtle. So, but anyway, yeah, I love teaching with kids. Yeah. I like to see like what they come up with, and one of the things that's hard as a teacher and as a filmmaker is like you feel like you in the beginning are almost like you have to try to get yourself out of the equation and not tell the story you want to tell.
Yeah.
You have to let them, like, even if you don't agree with their point of view or whatever, you have to let them make the film that they want to make. And that's always, like, an interesting thing as a teacher.
Yeah.
To go. So, yeah. Wow. Yeah. Ah, all right, now I'm all high.
Oh, that's fun. Let's see if we can close it down a bit. Where can people find you online if they want to know more about Jesse Epstein and her things?
I made an interactive website for this body type series.
Yeah.
It's a new video game where you can like practice your chops at photo retouching and look at two pictures and see if you can figure out what's been done.
Yeah.
But I guess the easiest website to remember is just jessedocs.com.
Yeah.
JesseDocs.com, and it actually connects to the body typed site, but I think I made the URL too long. It's bodytypedfilmproject.com.
Yeah, that's a little bit.
That's a little long.
Yeah.
So Jesse Docs might be easier.
Yeah, it's like a cute little affectatious type of thing, where it's just like Jesse Docs.
I know. I was like, what do I call this? I'm like, I don't know. It's Jesse Docs.
Jesse Docs Inc.
So Inc. Exactly.
But are you on Twitter or the Facebook? I know you're on Facebook. That's how I contact you. But you're on Twitter or Pinterest?
Same thing. I think it's Jesse Docs.
Okay. Yeah, that's cool.
And the Facebook? Yeah, Facebook is. Is Facebook Jesse Epstein or Jesse Docs? I don't know. It might be.
Okay. So that's where people can find you. And aren't you glad I didn't ask you any patronizing woman filmmaker questions?
Oh God, right.
Yeah, just like I roll up on you like, as a woman, how do you feel you perceive yourself being a person with a camera and a vagina? How do you feel having those two things together like that in this
Yoni films? I know. I don't even know what to say to that. I was in a women's film festival recently and I was trying to figure out what I thought of it all. I'm like, you know, I guess it's still only 7% of Hollywood. So many women are in documentary though.
Yeah.
And part of it I think is good, and part of it I think is it's sort of the social work of filmmaking. So it's a little bit like, you know, and we don't usually make that much money. So it's a little bit, you know, I have to think about this. There are many more, you know, female documentary filmmakers than female narrative filmmakers. What does that say?
Well, I mean, it's a sad thing when you think about it. Because, especially once again, I hate to bring in how old I'm getting into this. But just like when you get old, you just find, you know, I don't give a shit who you are. Just make something good. Just make something. And I mean, speaking of documenting somebody who's covered full frame documentary for years, and just like when you see female documentaries made by female filmmakers, it's, you know, it's a lot. They're often very good, and just like it seems you can get away with a lot more when you make documentaries, and because when you make narrative films, you know, narrative films are always, whether it's directed by a man or a woman, always scrutinized and just like watched carefully by execs and by studios and by financiers and everybody. And this is even before the movie comes out. And like when you're just a documentary filmmaker, it's almost like you can, as long as you just have the, you know, permission of the subject, and you just know what you want to do. Like, I mean, you can get away with it. So that's why there are a lot of female documentaries, like Barbara Kopple or Chris Hedges, or just like a lot of the female filmmakers in that field, because it's just like it's just easy to just. I'm not saying
it's easier to be part, like, financially.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's easy. Yeah, just easy in that sense than it is. I mean, because I don't know if you ever thought about making that leap over to narrative filmmaking.
No. I have, but then it's like I always get more interested in, like, you know, if someone says, do you want to make a narrative film about bike messengers? My instinct is to, like, go find a real bike messenger and just talk to them, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
And then, like, people, documentary is kind of like people watching. Like, you get the privilege of being able to, like, stare at people.
Yeah.
When they don't get mad. So there's something else about it that, it's hard to explain. It's that I love.
Yeah.
Also, you know, I went to this party last night at POV.
Yeah.
And there's so many, like, amazing people there that were fun to talk to. And it's not so competitive. And the fact that, like, you know, with narrative filmmaking, I feel like people get very competitive with each other.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. Seems like it. But in documentary, it's just, like, a lot of really awesome people. Yeah. So... maybe they're just my friends, so I like them.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't trying to make it sound like condescending, just like, oh, you documentarians have it up so easy. I mean, no, you don't, because you work on movies for years and everything. But it's just like, in terms of, as somebody who's spoken to narrative filmmaker after narrative filmmaker and the pain and bullshit they've gone through to make films. Like, when I talk to documentarians, it almost seems like a cakewalk. Yeah, like, I just followed these people around for a couple of years, and just we had a lot of footage, and we just
made it. You can just do it.
Yeah.
If you have a camera, you can just do it. You don't have to, like, have trucks and HMIs and, like, all this, you know. It's a lot.
Yeah.
To get the permission when someone says, yes, here's the, like, you know, we're gonna finance this, it's a different amount of money.
Yeah.
You know? It's just the only thing about... documentary that is tricky is that, you know, it's mostly inherently uncertain, right? So you have to trust that there's going to be a good story. You have to trust the filmmaker. So to get funding is tricky because you're coming to someone with an idea and you're saying, I think this is what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, if you have a script, you can see the movie a lot of time in your head, and it probably will be different than it seems, but it's still... it's a different process than you know, funding a documentary. So, but like you said, you know, if you have a camera, you can go and make a movie.
Yeah.
You don't have to, for somebody else to give you permission to make it.
Uh-huh.
So that's nice.
Yeah, it is. I say it is very much. So was this fun for you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely, you know, sleep deprived, and you know, the other thing about breastfeeding is you get very hungry, so I need to, like, go and eat a steak or something.
Yeah, well, you could refuel and do all that stuff.
But no, this is fun, and I liked what you said. I'm gonna go back and listen to it, so I can remember how you were explaining how I make films.
Yeah, when this comes out one of these days, it's like, I don't know. I mean, I need to work very hard on this podcast and make it seem as though it's professional. Because it's so not.
I think you should keep it as is. I think it should be like the public access channel of podcasts.
Oh, yeah, trust. Yeah, this is very low-level public access shit we got here.
Exactly. That's the charm.
All right. Well, thank you very much for taking time to do all this. The booby juice and everything. And just let me close this out here.
That's going to be the name of my next movie.
Booby Juice Productions or something like that.
Oh, that's perfect.
Yeah. Well, let me close it out here. This is Craig D. Lindsay saying, I definitely haven't had a good time since 1997. And we'll just leave it at that.